Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. We are here this afternoon for 1 hour. I've had a whole bunch of things we had to have happen here at the house today. I had to put in a new washing machine, which I'm still working on, because the floor that the old one sat on was a little bit uneven, and the new one is a front loader, so it kind of has a tendency to wobble where the other one didn't. But because of that, I haven't really been able to plan for this show as well as I normally do. And I've also got it figured out that I will have an hour show rather than having it go away at 15 minutes like it did last week. That was really kind of one of those things where it just didn't work out the way I wanted it to. But that's neither here nor there. I have a quote from one of our presidents to give you, and see if you can guess who it is. Quote, "Today we need a nation of Minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take up arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as the basic purpose of their daily life and who are willing to consciously work and sacrifice," unquote. Now, if you haven't guessed, the person who said that was President John F. Kennedy. If you listen to Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or even Mad Maxine Waters, you'll see that kind of patriotism, the kind that was John F. Kennedy, no longer exists in the Democrat Party. As a matter of fact, if John F. Kennedy ran for president today, the Democrats wouldn't have anything to do with him. They talk border security, but all they want to do is what has been tried and failed many, many times in the past for the future. In their eyes, the nation's security can only be handled by them because, for one thing, no one else is smart enough, according to them. In their eyes, the nation's security can only be handled by them because they are the only ones smart enough to do it. Never mind that all of their policies have, never mind the history says their policies will fail, but none of the rest of us are smart enough to even get a chance. If we have the audacity to even attempt, then we are destroying our quote unquote democracy and our way of life, when it is really them that is destroying our constitutional republic, which is what we really have here. This is the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, or NWCR, as I've been calling it. And I'm your host, Robert Campadel, with today's show. Glad you are here with us on this, the 16th day of December. Holy crap, this last month of 2018 is already here. The first half of the month is already in the tank. And now, on with the show.
Roger that. News sources that there is serious talk of Antifa having a nationwide protest slash riot. I think it was like November 4th or 3rd.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. At the rate our leaders are ignoring our Constitution, We're finding that they cannot lead, nor do they want to keep us safe from our enemies. And yes, we have some. From the crossroads of America, the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show is brought to you through the traditional American Patriot Network with the Doctor of this Republic, showing that the truth can be told to save this nation. And now, on with the show.
Okay, we are back. The call-in number to be on the show is 646-478-5284 if you wish to join the discussion for the short time that we are going to be here today. Last Monday, I did an update that didn't go out to anyone because Facebook, in all their unwise liberal glory, blocked it. Probably because it went against their new darling of socialism, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who keeps giving to us conservatives with her total stupidity about this country and what she is going to, and that she is going to Congress to quote unquote represent us. Ha! That is a laugh. She isn't going to be representing anyone but Karl Marx, but I digress. Since my update didn't show up on Facebook like I planned, and I couldn't even pull it off there to make an MP4 file out of it to put it on my site, I decided to do it here on my show. So here it is. From Western Journal comes this one, folks. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is having a rough introduction to national politics. The self-described socialist who was elected to Congress in November may not have even taken office yet, but she's already a bit over her head. A bit? I would actually say it's a lot over her head. But on Thursday, the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., and that's last Thursday, posted a meme teasing Ocasio-Cortez with a jab at her far-left proposals. Why are you so afraid of a socialist economy? The text over a photo of the young and wide-eyed lawmaker asked. The answer came with the next photo. Because Americans want to walk their dogs, not eat them, joked the text over a picture of Donald Trump below it. Now, it was apparent to everybody with half or even a quarter of a brain that the meme was referring to Venezuela, the socialist country in which has become a totally impoverished dump where citizens have been forced to eat their own pets to fend off starvation. But naturally, Ocasio-Cortez didn't get it. Every elected official faces scrutiny and, yes, even mockery. It comes with the territory. Part of free speech is that citizens are able to make fun of their representatives. So if anybody can't handle that, they should rethink running for public office. Instead of just ignoring the jab or taking it in good humor, Ocasio-Cortez did something totally bizarre. She seemed to threaten Don Jr. with the power of her coming office when she tweeted back, quote, I have noticed that Jr. here has a habit of posting nonsense about me whenever the Mueller investigation heats up, the Congresswoman-elect posted on her official Twitter account. Please keep it coming, Jr. It's definitely a very, very large brain idea to troll a member of a body that will soon have subpoena power in a month, she ominously continued. She thinks she will have subpoena power? Little does she know. The New York lawmaker had every right to respond to the post if she wished, although the professionalism of doing so is questionable. What she doesn't have the right to do, however, is threaten a citizen with subpoena over an internet joke, and comments from others came in. Like, quote, are you threatening to use your power as a federal official to subpoena anyone who mocks or otherwise disagrees with you on the internet? Asked Sean Davis, co-founder of the Federalist magazine. Then things got serious as Davis continued by pointing out, it's worth noting that the official House Ethics Manual explicitly prohibits the kind of that Ocasio-Cortez just issued against Donald Trump Jr. for his refusal to support her political agenda. Lawmakers are prohibited from threatening punitive action against people or gangs or groups for not politically supporting the lawmaker. Ethics Committee should investigate, he continued. Members are not to take or withhold any official action on the basis of the campaign contributions or support of the involved individuals or their partisan affiliation. Members are likewise prohibited from threatening punitive action on the basis of such considerations, unquote. The House prohibition on that very kind of threat that Ocasio, in her tweet, just made to Donald Trump Jr. couldn't be clearer. Lawmakers are prohibited from threatening punitive action against people groups for not politically supporting the lawmaker. Ethics Committee should investigate. Other Twitter users had high profile accounts joined in the fray, calling out Ocasio-Cortez for what can only be described as a veiled threat. Quote, sorry, did this fool just threaten to use the power of government to punish a citizen because he posted a meme? Asked Brandon Morse of Red State. Did you just threaten to subpoena someone for criticizing you? As a lawyer and former prosecutor, I find this deeply troubling, commented Fox's Kimberly Guilfoyle. I tend to be nice about you and defend you from silly attacks quite a bit, but I also found it concerning and threatening, echoed Brandon Darby of Breitbart. In fact, I don't see how what you express could be taken any differently than someone threatening to abuse their power. And now to remove the liberal blindfolds, folks. He's right. This can't be taken any other way. Maybe Ocasio-Cortez could take a break from protesting her own party and giving clueless interviews to actually take her job seriously and learn the law that she is supposed to have to know. And that begins with seeing Americans as people she serves, not peons that she can threaten. Sorry, did this fool just threaten to use the power of the government to punish a citizen because he posted a meme? Asked Brandon Morse of Red State. Here, Brandon called her what her action made her, a fool. Ocasio-Cortez should listen to these people who have told her that her coming office does not have that power. But I doubt she will. She has shown little intelligence when it comes to being verbally attacked, and that will definitely show us some interesting and probably illegal stuff in the coming year or two. Enough to make her back down? Probably not, but she has to learn. This is something that just cannot be done, and Ocasio-Cortez has already done it, even before taking office. I can tell you one thing right now. If she was a Republican and did this, she would never be sworn into office. The Democrats would make sure of that. But because she's a Democrat, you can hear the crickets chirping through the silence in the winter night. So come January, this little twit is going to become a U.S. Congresswoman. The sad part of this? She is acting more like the little girl she is than a grown-up woman about to take a representative office in our government. If that doesn't scare you, folks, then I don't know what to think of our future as a free country, because it is with people like Ocasio-Cortez that we are frittering away our freedoms at an ever faster rate than ever before in our history. If we don't listen to that little gem of truth, folks, our nation will turn more socialistic and we are going to lose all of the freedoms that we have left, and the government will take them all. Then we will be totally under the whims of them, and we will have no say in our own lives. The government will rule us all with an iron hand, and to hell with what we want, because that won't matter. And if it gets to that point, folks, it'll be too late. Another rebellion like the Revolutionary War will have to happen to get it back. A Fort Drum soldier was killed in a non-combat related incident while serving in Afghanistan. The Department of Defense announced Friday that PFC Joshua Mikowski, 19, of Johnstown, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, died Thursday at Bagram Air Force Base, Bagram District, Parwan Province in Afghanistan. PFC Mikowski served as a health care specialist assigned to Fort Drum's 4th Battalion, 31st Infantry Regiment, 2nd Battalion, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 10th Mountain Division. He is survived by his mother and father. At Jefferson Community College on Friday night to give a commencement speech, General Major General Walter E. Piatt, P-I-A-T-T, Senior Commander of Fort Drum and the 10th Mountain Division, said that the details about the incident have not yet emerged. "It's the saddest part of my job," he said. "You can imagine at this time of year losing a loved one." He mentioned that 10th Mountain Division soldiers are deploying many times during their careers. "The sun never sets on the 10th Mountain Patch," he said, noting the tragedy involved in the loss of such a young person. In October, PFC Mikowski's unit arrived in Afghanistan, where it was supporting NATO's Resolute Support Mission and the U.S.-led Operation Freedom Sentinel, training and advising Afghan security forces. PFC Mikowski, I guess Mikowski, M-I-K-E-A-S-K-Y, joined the Army in September 2017, and followed basic combat training and advanced individual training. God bless him and his family.
We will be right back after these important messages.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
No one can really imagine what lifestyle our military families live while they serve to protect us, both foreign and domestically. These families say goodbye to their loved ones for months and even years at a time. They miss births, birthdays, Christmases, anniversaries, first steps, first words, and they are sometimes not even recognized upon their return. They move every 2 to 4 years. Their children have to go to a new school, make new friends, and just to keep up with all the changes and losses while their parent is gone is hard work. A lot of people don't realize the financial burden of relocating a family time and time again. Not only that, but insurance rates change every time, coming up with first, last, and deposit for an apartment if there isn't housing available to you. Traveling home for emergencies that the military doesn't cover. The list goes on and on. People think the government covers all costs for us, and it's unfortunately not true. Because of all the troubles they have, families are at times in need of help and greatly need our patriotic citizens to give them a helping hand by sending in donations. Sam Fam Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3 foundation that is dedicated to helping America's active military. We understand that separation is difficult, and being a single parent while your significant other is protecting our homeland is a burden that few can relate to. Our mission is to provide support, protection, and help boost morale and peace of mind for the active duty military. We also want to assist retired veterans. The families we help are chosen through essays. Now here is where we ask for help. Right now, we can only accept checks made out to Sam Fam Inc. That is SAM-FAM, Inc. 18 Eastern Avenue, Sackau, Maine, 04072, and that's the S-A-C-O. Make sure to put my name or one of the other members' names on there so this can be credited with the right person. Your donations are tax deductible. Thanks in advance, and God bless.
We have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, couch purring, bed leaping, and of course, companionship.
Wonderful. And what breed would you say Nico is?
I'd have to go with a tabbyish Persian kind of mix.
Tremendous cat.
I'd also like to point out her coat's wonderful mix of colors. Is it black, gray, gray-black, brown?
Somewhere in between.
Indeed.
You know, it's always special when we get to see a cat like this.
Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And how she's so incredibly cute in her indifference to commands.
A strong-willed feline.
Ah, and see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
I know. Fantastic cat.
Fantastic indeed. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend. You were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No. Not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Waters labels Bush a racist and endorses Clinton. Now, this is something that I had mentioned last week, but none of it really showed up, I don't think. I got to listen to part of the show. It was only like about 15 minutes, but I don't know how much of this got through. So I'm going to reread this stuff because it's stuff that really should be pushed forward on, because if we don't, nobody's ever going to know it, because the news media will not report on this kind of thing. That was a headline that Waters labeled Bush a racist. That was a headline of July 9th, 1992 edition of the Los Angeles Times. In it, it said, Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat Los Angeles, Wednesday branded President Bush a racist who has polarize the races in this country. Now, does that sound familiar here, folks? It's exactly what the Democrats are claiming about Trump, isn't it? That he's a racist, that he's a homophobe, that he's this, he's that, he's everything that is going to destroy our democracy, of which we are not one, by the way. But that's just what they're saying. Waters said that she has pledged to support Bill Clinton's presidential campaign, partly because the soon-to-be Democratic nominee is much better on the race question than Bush. Waters blurted out that charge, not after a few drinks at the Mayflower or a bad cup of coffee that put her in a disagreeable mood. She leveled it at the National Press Club during her two-hour panel discussion on African-American attitudes on politics. She said she wanted to say, quote, very clearly that I believe George Bush is a racist. I believe he's a racist for many, many reasons, unquote. The Times reporter noted that Waters' gem was met with wide-eyed stares from the audience. Still, she was undeterred, adding emphatically that Bush is a mean-spirited man who has no care or concern about what happens to the African-American community in this country. I truly believe that, unquote. This was evidently in contrast to Bill Clinton. She and fellow black voters would have little trouble picking Clinton for Bush because they believed George Bush and Bill Clinton are decidedly different, explained Waters. I sincerely believe that Bill Clinton really did attempt to get a civil rights bill passed in his state and could not get past his legislature. It was a pretty nasty charge. Did Maxine later apologize for it? No, as Democrats always do. They never apologize for anything, but they always want apologies when it's the other way around. But Waters, no apologies for her calling the president a racist, said the follow-up headline in Los Angeles Times. The context was Vice President Dan Quayle's defense of his boss against Waters' smear. But Maxine was having none of it. The article reported, listen carefully, Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat, advised Vice President Dan Quayle from afar on Saturday, there will be no apology for her calling President Bush a racist. Dan Quayle doesn't know me, Waters said at an appearance in Inglewood. My mother couldn't make me do that. Waters' message, greeted with applause and loud whoops from a largely African-American crowd, came 2 days after Quayle demanded that the Democratic presidential candidate Bill Clinton publicly apologize for the comment about Bush by the congresswoman. Waters serves as one of Clinton's national campaign co-chairs. Neither Quayle nor a spokesman for him could be reached for comment on Saturday. Waters set the charge for the hubbub early last month when she made the racist accusation against Bush in the National Press Club in Washington. Waters charged that the president is a mean-spirited man who has no care or concern about what happens to the African-American community in the country. And Quayle revived the issue on Thursday during the campaign stop in a small Ohio town where he was asked about a recent personal attack on Clinton by the Bush's top campaign aides. If you want to talk about negative campaigning, look at what Waters said about George Bush, Quayle said. She called George Bush a racist. Calling him a racist is totally unacceptable, and Bill Clinton ought to apologize, unquote. Nope, no apologies, none from Maxine, none from Bill Clinton, none from a single Democrat. George H.W. Bush, a lousy, stinking racist. Now, I mention this now, obviously, because liberals are upholding the late George H.W. Bush as a paragon of decency and civility in politics and the presidency, which he indeed was. In truth, they couldn't treat Bush with decency or civility during nor his son George W. Bush, nor his predecessor Ronald Reagan, nor Richard Nixon, or any in a long line of Republicans. They have long engaged in vicious name-calling and character assaults towards Republican opponents, and they still do it today. Of course, their extolling of Bush's virtues has a hollow ring of insincerity, as their praise of Bush is no doubt unintended to shed negative light on President Donald Trump, carefully hailed as a good man, and thus as the anti-Trump. If only Donald Trump could be a gentleman, a kind man, a moral exemplar like Bush. Bush is canonized in death as a momentary political saint for liberals in order to further expose the current devil in the Oval Office, St. George versus Demon Donald. As they proceed with that handy narrative, however, we should pause to remind liberals that they vilified George H.W. Bush as they did his son, as they did Reagan, as they did Nixon, and so on and so on and so on. And yes, they even called George H.W. Bush a racist. And now when they dub Donald Trump a racist, they express amazement that those blockheaded, Kool-Aid guzzling Trumpists will not take them seriously. Well, a whole lot of liberal nastiness over many, many years has led so many of us to never take them seriously when they say anything or when they hurl over-the-top insults at Republicans, as they always have, and expect us to forget that they have done that when they come to a funeral and heap praises on him, going on again, years of racist comments. No, we don't believe them, but sadly, like some, the media do. We all know the fable about the boy who cried wolf. Maxine Waters is the girl who cried racist. She's hardly alone. There's a slew of liberals who have cried racist over the years when there was none, but they never look at their side when doing that, because that is where a lot of the racists really are. On Friday, Fox News reported U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor struck down Barack Obama's signature legislation, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And I'm sorry about the noise in the background. That's the washing machine. For some reason, I just cannot get that thing to settle down and start being less noisy on the spins, but that's okay. But the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, has been listed as unconstitutional, stating that the massive law cannot be separated from the individual mandate. According to Fox News, Texas, along with 19 states, had argued to U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor that they had been hurt by a jump in the amount of people utilizing state-backed insurance. When Congress cut the tax penalty from the program in 2017, the states claimed it essentially undercut the Supreme Court's reasoning for finding former President Barack Obama's signature legislation constitutional in 2012. The remainder of the ACA is non-severable from the individual mandate, meaning that the act must be invalidated in whole, O'Connor wrote, according to Bloomberg. As I predicted all along, Obamacare has been struck down as unconstitutional, as an unconstitutional disaster, President Trump tweeted following the ruling. Now Congress must pass a strong law that provides great health care and protects pre-existing conditions. Mitch and Nancy, get it done. In a second tweet, he, the president, declared the ruling to be great news for America. Well, the great news for America would be when the government finally realizes healthcare is not where they are supposed to be. They shouldn't even be in that, for crying out loud. They're not supposed to be in that. But White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders addressed the ruling in a statement. Obamacare has been struck down by a highly respected judge, she said. The judge's decision vindicates President Trump's position that Obamacare is unconstitutional, she added. Once again, the president calls on Congress to replace Obamacare and act to protect people with pre-existing conditions and provide America with quality health care, affordable health care. We expect this ruling will be appealed to the Supreme Court, which it will be. Pending the appeal process, the law remains in place. Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, blasted the ruling as being biased on faulty legal reasoning and demanded Americans do all they can to stop the ruling from going into effect. The problem here is that Obamacare is not where the government needs to be. Healthcare is not, and let me repeat this, Schumer, not what the Constitution says the government can do. Healthcare should be left to the free market. Would come down then, and competition would cause that. Government gets involved, and there is no. Well, I'm going to have to stop this a second because the house where I need to be. I should have gone in there first. That's okay. I got a bunch of noisy people coming in, and that's neither here nor there. But if a federal judge had done this decision on something the Republicans passed, everyone would leave it alone because the judge did what he was supposed to do. But because Obamacare was the law of the land, illegally, by the way, it doesn't matter to the Democrats. They don't care what the judge says. They will contest it until they get their way. Because of these things the Democrats are doing, the budget for what the government does is so much higher than it should be. These things do cost money, folks. All of this of the Democrats pushing legislation and pushing things that do not need to be pushed, it all costs money. And if we don't stop and realize this, the Democrats are costing you more money than the Republicans. But that's not something you ever hear, is it? That's not something you ever hear. And that's the sad part of the whole thing.
We will be right back after these important messages.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Vietnam was the war where American troops showed valor and bravery on the battlefields, but where the enemy was nothing more than ghosts in the jungle, and they were superstitious too. This gave rise to the Vampire Patrol, six men who fought the whole war together, spreading death and destruction along with vampire voodoo lore into the ranks of the enemy with precision and cutthroat accuracy. Now, years later, Matt Joseph works as a private investigator in Tucson, Arizona, with his own business, the Matt Joseph's Investigation Company. His best friend and former commander of the Vampire Patrol is chief of police of the South Tucson Police Department. The job that gets Matt on the case is one that brings the Vampire Patrol back from its past and places it smack dab in the middle of the present, taking him to a small town on the Indian reservation called Lukachukai in northern Arizona. There, a mountain named Roof Butte not only holds mystery, but a cloud of fear that oozes out of it into the evening sky. Matt is the one who has been hired to find out what is going on there, and without becoming a part of the nasty plan going on in the area. Night Owls is the first in a new series of mysteries with Matt Joseph, Private Eye, and is on sale now at https://www.createspace.com/486-9187. That's www.createspace.com/486-9187. It is also available in digital form, too, and on Amazon also. That's Night Owls, Matt Joseph Mystery by Robert P. Garding. Buy it, read it, and enjoy the reading experience again. Order Night Owls today.
No one can really imagine what lifestyle our military families live while they serve to protect us, both foreign and domestically. These families say goodbye to their loved ones for months and even years at a time. They miss births, birthdays, Christmases, anniversaries, first steps, first words, and they are sometimes not even recognized upon their return. They move every 2 to 4 years, their children have to go to a new school, make new friends, and just to keep up with all the changes and losses while their parent is gone is hard work. A lot of people don't realize the financial burden of relocating a family time and time again. Not only that, but insurance rates change every time, coming up with first, last, and deposit for an apartment if there isn't housing available to you. Traveling home for emergencies that the military doesn't cover. The list goes on and on. People think the government covers all costs for us, and it's unfortunately not true. Because of all the troubles they have, families are at times in need of help and greatly need our patriotic citizens to give them a helping hand by sending in donations. Sam Fam Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3 foundation that is dedicated to helping America's active military. We understand that separation is difficult, and being a single parent while your significant other is protecting our homeland is a burden that few can relate to. Our mission is to provide support, protection, and help boost morale and peace of mind for the active duty military. We also want to assist retired veterans. The families we help are chosen through essays. Now here is where we ask for help. Right now we can only accept checks made out to Sam Fam Inc. That is Sam-Fam, Inc. 18 Eastern Avenue, Sacow, Maine, 04072. And that's S-A-C-O. make sure to put my name or one of the other members' names on there so this can be credited with the right person. Your donations are tax deductible. Thanks in advance, and God bless.
Okay, Sarah, I'm dropping you at Emily's, and Josh, you're going to soccer, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, when I pick you up, I'll be wearing my short shorts.
What?
No!
Yep, me and my short shorts doing my daddy dance. Your friends will love it.
No!
Well, I might change my mind if you buckle your seatbelts.
Okay, okay, we're buckling up.
See, all buckled.
Whatever it takes, keep them safe. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. Visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup for more information.
On what it means to be a true patriot. Liberals, you listening? I asked veterans how civilians should thank them for their service. One answer proved to be the most common. Patriotism. Volunteer in your community. Try to make a difference and vote for what you believe is right. Honor the actions of veterans by ensuring that your voice is heard at the ballot box. Educate yourself on veterans' issues. There are a number of fantastic organizations that help veterans with real issues, but most impactful is to use your right to make your voice heard, one of which advertise on this show, which you just heard the advertisement for. But what are characteristics of a true patriot? Here are my thoughts. A true patriot is proud to be a citizen of this country. A true patriot is not afraid to show his love for his country by proudly displaying the flag, wearing the shirts, and driving around with patriotic stickers. A true patriot attends the events that support the spirit of patriotism. A true patriot honors servicemen and women and veterans. A true patriot participates in elections. A true patriot does rigorous research, selects the candidates that best support our constitutional republic and uphold our foundational values, talks to others about the best candidates and about voting in general. A true patriot stays abreast of local, national, and global news and issues. A true patriot wants to know what is going on around the country and in the world and how it may affect our country, its citizens, and its future, not just because they agree with you. A true patriot wants to be involved in the government for the people and by the people by making his or her voice heard. By signing petitions, advancing issues, and being a citizen for the full extent possible. Aside from that, as someone who deeply loves his country and wants to make it a better place, a true patriot urges others to be involved too. A true patriot holds the truths of our Constitution and Declaration of Independence and stands up for those principles by calling out those who attempt to violate them and by protecting their place and their role in our republic, again, not just those on the other side of the aisle. A true patriot respects his fellow countrymen and does not discriminate against people in any matters simply because they are different. A true patriot keeps an eye out for those who attempt to take away the rights that we as Americans have as they were designed by our founding fathers and by God. Why am I telling you all of this? And there's even one more that I didn't put in there. A true patriot wants to keep our borders safe. But why am I telling you all this? Because now is the time to remember our roots. Now is the time to show our true patriotism and hold nothing back. Things are happening right now that put our great country at risk, and the republic, as it was designed by those who founded it, is crumbling. If we love this country, we have to be the people that not only keep our eyes open for threats to our liberty, but also help open the eyes of us to direct our elected officials to do what they were elected to do, to retain our republic and our government by the people, for the people, as it was intended. I write these emails to help my fellow Americans stay sharp, prepared, and well-informed so that we can steer the ship in the right direction and save this country from disaster. And it is coming, folks. If we want to keep our country We have to do no less than that. Now, in this article that I found, I changed a few things. Everywhere that I said republic, the author put democracy. But we are not, which we are not formed to be. We are becoming. We must remember, folks, a democracy is nothing more than mob rule. And if you look around our nation, we are becoming that more and more each and every day. Something we have to remember. From Todd Starnes comes this one, folks. Christmas is again under attack, and so is God, from the indoctrination centers for our children, our public schools. Are you tired of conservatives and Christians being censored on social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter? If so, this is a must-read for patriots. The principal of Manchester Elementary School in Elkhorn, Nebraska, is on Santa's naughty list now. Jennifer Sinclair sent a letter to the teachers announcing a ban on Christmas for the sake of inclusiveness. Please remember, she said, that we are not to be doing any Christmas or holiday specific themed activities with students, she wrote in the letter. Santa and Christmas items are not to be on activities or copies. We have varied religious beliefs in our school, and it is our job to be inclusive. That is inclusive of everyone but Christians anyway. Okay, so I guess that's fine. As long as we don't include Christians and everybody else is included, then that's fine. Principal Sinclair banned Christmas trees, Christmas carols, Santa Claus, and Elf on the Shelf. Candy canes were also off limits because the principal said quote, the shape is J for Jesus, unquote. Really? She went on to say, the red is for the blood of Christ, and the white is a symbol for his resurrection, she wrote. She's an idiot. I mean, it could be that that is the reason why, but is that a reason why to take candy canes away from kids? Also deemed not acceptable. Now, you got to get this list here, folks, because it's happening, and it's in the United States. Here's what's banned. Singing Christmas carols, playing Christmas music, making a Christmas ornament as a gift, Christmas clip art, reading Christmas-themed stories. Sorry, Tiny Tim. Colors red and green. Reindeer. Christmas movies. So long, Frosty. Yes, good listeners, the principal banned the reason for the season. Liberty Council, a public policy organization dedicated to religious liberty, fired off a letter to Elkhorn Public Schools warning them that the principal's Christmas ban is unconstitutional. Ban violates the U.S. Constitution by showing hostility towards Christianity, wrote attorney Robert Mast. The principal appears to have conflated her own values and preferences with the law. As the Liberty Council pointed out, the First Amendment does not require the elimination of all Christmas symbols, religious or secular. The effort to comprehensively eliminate Christmas symbols is Orwellian, Mast concluded. The school district investigated the matter and determined that Principal Sinclair's memorandum to teachers violated district policy. They quickly reversed course, meaning Santa Claus is once again welcome in the classroom. One final note. The principal has also issued a list of acceptable seasonal decorations, including Yetis, penguins, polar bears, and Olaf, a character from the movie Frozen. She also permitted teachers to decorate with gingerbread people and snowflakes. That certainly seems to be appropriate, and is how there appears to be a lot of snowflakes in the Elkhorn school system. We will be right back.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
It feels like you're frozen, petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
All right, class. Let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him in the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Okay, I'm sorry here. My thing went dead on me and... Lessons on the Constitution comes this from folks. Last week, the show really didn't air because I made a mistake in the time. So this didn't go last week like it should have, so it's being repeated. Women's voting rights as pertains to the Constitution is this week's discussion done by Douglas V. Gibbs in his Constitution classes that he teaches. The last time we talked about prohibition, women's voting rights. The 19th Amendment established uniform voting rights for women nationwide. It was ratified August 18th of 1920. Women, despite popular opinion, did vote in elections prior to that ratification of the 19th Amendment. In 1869, women in the newly created territory of Wyoming became the first women in the United States to win the right to vote. Colorado gave voting rights to women in 1892. Both Utah and Idaho gave women right to vote in 1896. The Constitution gives the states the right to determine their own rules for elections. The women's suffrage movement worked to bring about an amendment that would bring women's voting rights nationwide. The amendment was first proposed in 1878, and it took 41 years before it was submitted to the states for ratification. It took about a year to receive enough votes for ratification. Susan B. Anthony, already known for her crusade for abolition of slavery and the prohibition of alcohol, added women's suffrage to her plate. By 1878, she was able to induce a senator from California to introduce a resolution in Congress calling for an amendment to the Constitution which would give women throughout the United States the right to vote. The drive for the amendment that would grant uniform voting rights for women was nothing new. Aaron Burr, the vice president during Thomas Jefferson's presidency, was a fervent believer in women's rights and took personal charge of his daughter's course of study, insisting she learn Greek, Latin, French, along with literature, philosophy, and sciences. His proposals for the uniform voting rights for women, however, never gained much traction. John Adams, the second president of the United States, also supported expanding women's freedoms. As a great admirer of his wife, Abigail, he often went to her for advice. In 1776, as the founders put into full gear their drive for American independence, Abigail offered in a letter, "I long to hear that you have declared an independency, and by the way, with new with the new code of laws, which I suppose will be necessary for you to make, I desire you would remember the ladies to be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. A challenge to the 19th Amendment, Lesser versus Garnett, 1922, claimed that the amendment was unconstitutionally adopted, that rules for elections were implicitly delegated to the individual states because of the need to preserve the state sovereignty. However, the very fact that the change in voting rules was put through was through amendment made the argument against the 19th Amendment a moot point. Once the 19th Amendment was ratified with this new power, women were able to attempt to elect those who shared their beliefs, hoping that other measures that would push forward the fight for women's rights would also emerge. After the 19th Amendment passed, the percentage of women in the workforce increased to about 25%. Though some discrimination continued and women rarely held decision-making positions, it was definitely a step in the right direction for the purpose of encouraging the rights of women. During World War II, women were needed in all areas since many of the men went overseas to fight. The percentage of women in the workforce increased to 36%. The boom for women was short-lived, however. When the war ended, the soldiers returned home. 2 million women were fired within 15 months after the end of the war to make room for the men again. Despite such setbacks, by the 1980s, the percentage of women in the workforce exceeded 50%. However, the percentage of women voting has not equaled the original push shortly after the ratification of the 19th Amendment. Advocates for family values, though supportive of equal opportunity, often view these advancements as promotion for the breakup of the family unit. With mothers participating in the workforce, advent of women's rights also given rise to the emergence of latchkey kids. The greatest right for women is choice, which includes the choice to not pursue the numerous opportunities available for the purpose of following a more traditional role, should they desire to make such a choice. Women in today's society have a choice to pursue a career, be a stay-at-home mom and wife, or attempt to juggle both. For the purpose of protecting the family unit, the traditional nature of the American society, wife and mother remains the more popular choice. Now, the terms that I used in this one, women's suffrage, was the right of women to vote and run for office. The expression is also used for the economic and political reform movements aimed at extending these rights to women without any restrictions or qualifications such as property ownership, payment of tax, or marital status. Now, the questions for this discussion that he put in there, were women allowed to vote in national elections before the ratification of the 19th Amendment? And you heard me talk about that one. How did the abolition movement and temperance movement lead some to also support the women's suffrage? 3, on what grounds was the 19th Amendment challenged? 4, how has the drive for rights of women changed in the to an opposite extreme? And 5, how has women's right movement affected the concept of the traditional family unit? Now, I am glad that you were all here today. I did not open the chat room today, but I'm glad that you were here for us today. As we move into another week, you can be assured of one thing. There will be more news that is befitting of another show next week. And I wish to thank you all who listened to the show today and who will listen to it in the archives. And I know that I will be here again next week, same time, same network, same channel. And as we get ourselves going for this next thing, Until next
Hello,
time, my friend.
Hello, this is the IIAP, the Illegal Immigration Assistance Program, a taxpayer-funded division of OPNUD for Spanish Press 1,
Have a great
Portuguese
day.
2, Arabic 3, Farsi 4, French 5, Swahili 6, German 7, Italian 8, and if you insist on English, please stand by. If you're thinking about illegal immigration, be careful when you're choosing the nation, because breaking the law in some countries is frowned upon. Imagine that. Sneak into China, they'll call you a spy, ship you to Mongolia till you're dying. In the Sudan, they'll hang you and the camel you rode in on. Yeah, and don't go hiking and enter Iran, or you might never be heard from again. And in Mexico, you might face a firing squad. Yeah, forget all about going to North Korea. That's a great example of a bad idea. So when it comes down to it, there's only one option you got. Yeah, come to the USA. There's no penalty to pay should you get caught illegally immigrating. Come to the USA. It will be your lucky day. Cause when you get in, there's lots of goodies waiting. Like health care, welfare, free education, help with your voter registration and driver's license and credit cards and license plates for your car. Lots of jobs for you to do and employers who'll turn a blind eye to. Come to the USA. They'll give citizenship to your new baby. So you see, there's really only one choice for you. Come to the USA. There's no penalty to face should you get caught illegally immigrating. I said, come to the USA. It will be your lucky day. Cause when you get in, there's lots of goodies waiting. Yeah, you get public housing and cable TV and food stamps and even government cheese. The borders are a swinging door. Go home for a visit and come back for more. There's sanctuary and amnesty. Bring the whole family eventually. Yeah, come to the USA.
God bless you all.